All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we continue on here. After Reuben kind of throws his little temper tantrum, if you will, then we see what they end up doing to cover themselves, the brothers, en masse, with respect to their father, Jacob. And then we'll see Jacob's reaction to close out the chapter. So in verses 31 through 33 now, I've titled these verses, Jacob is Deceived. So they took Joseph's tunic and slaughtered a male goat. Well, consecutive, our verb to take, cal and perfect third masculine plural, lakach, L-A-Q-A-C-H. Sign of direct object, tunic or garment, is your common feminine singular construct noun, kutonet, C-U-T-T-O-N-E-T-H. Joseph, proper noun, slaughtered, while consecutive, with our cal and perfect third masculine plural verb, shakat, S-H-A-C-H-A-T-H. They killed or slaughtered a male goat, a goat of a female, literally, in the Hebrew. You have the common masculine singular noun construct, sa'ir, S-A-I-Y-R, goat of, the sa'ir of a eth, common feminine plural noun, E-T-H, nanny, also referred to as a doe, is a female goat. And dip the tunic in the blood. While consecutive, our verb to dip or plunge, they saturated it, basically is the idea here. Camel perfect third masculine plural, verb thaval, T-H-A-B-A-L. Sign of direct object, kutonet repeated, common feminine singular noun, garment, tunic. In the blood is a preposition bet, followed with the definite article, and our noun for blood, common masculine singular absolute, dam, D-A-M. Verse 32, I've corrected a little bit to bring out the proper sense here. And they sent the vari-colored tunic and had it brought to their father and said. While consecutive, then our verb sent is the PL imperfect third masculine plural, shalach, S-H-A-L-A-C-H. They sent off is the idea. The tunic here is given this full description. First, you have the definite article with the common feminine singular noun construct, kutoneth, repeated, the garment or tunic, followed with then the definite article and our common masculine plural noun absolute, pas, which means literally flat of the hand, P-A-S, indicating that the tunic, as we know, is a long sleeve garment, is seen the type of garment that royalty wears. The Septuagint translates these very colored, so that the Septuagint is a Greek translation of the Hebrew, and that is what most people follow in regards to this particular tunic. It had different colors attached to it. How very colored, I don't know. But a very colored tunic, what we don't want to lose here is the fact that it's given this full description. And had it brought to their father. You have, while consecutive, then our verb had it brought is the while consecutive with the hifil imperfect third masculine plural bo, B-O, literally, and they caused it to go to their father, preposition L, E-L, followed with our common masculine singular construct, third masculine plural suffix of, father, A-B, and said, while consecutive, followed with our cal and perfect third masculine plural mar, A-M-A-R. The message they give, we found this, please examine to see whether it is your son's tunic or not. First, you have the adjective feminine singular, zoth, D-O, TH. This refers to the tunic. This we found is the Hebrew cow perfect first common plural matzah. M-A-T-S-A. Then you had the Hifil imperative, masculine singular of our verb nakar, N-A-K-A-R, cause to discern, examine, instructions obviously given in an imperative form, imperatival form, now or please, this would be done with respect to their authority of their father, interjectory particle na, N-A. Then you had the interrogative particle ha, H-A, translated weather with the question mark. Then our noun for garment again is kudinef, common feminine singular struct. Here the garment of your son. They don't even use Joseph's name in the message. Common masculine singular struct, second masculine singular suffix ben, B-E-N. Then you have the third feminine singular pronoun, he, H-I-Y. It itself literally follows the conditional conjunction M, I-N, if, maybe, or not. It itself, if, maybe, or not, is your literal Hebrew. Then you have the negative particle, lo, L-O, not. Verse 33, then he examined it. He being obviously Jacob, and said, while consecutive, again our verb to examine, discern, to study it, to critique it, nakar, N-A-K-A-R, he fell in perfect third masculine singular with third feminine singular suffix, examined it, and he said, while consecutive, followed with our verb amar, typical construction. It is my son's tunic, so he recognizes immediately that it's Joseph's. You have the common feminine singular construct noun, kudinef, the garment. It is the garment, literally, of my son. Followed with the common masculine singular noun construct, first common singular suffix, ben, of my son, B-E-N. Then he draws his conclusion. A wild beast has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. You have the common feminine singular noun, absolute, kaya, C-H-A-Y-Y-A-H, a living beast or evil thing. You have the adjective feminine singular, absolute, ra'ah, R-A-A-H, that which does harm, usually rendered as evil. So a living evil thing or a living beast, a wild beast, is, as it's translated, which is fine, and that's what's in view here. It consumed or devoured him. You have the cow, perfect third feminine singular, or verb to eat, consume, a call, A-K-A-L. Then you have the cow infinity, absolute of the verb tharath, T-H-A-R-A-P-H, tearing, literally, he was torn to, is your Hebrew, tearing, he was torn. Cow infinity followed with the cow passive perfect. This is not the same dual use of the same verb as we've seen in the past. That's the infinitive with the cow imperfect. This is an infinitive with the cow passive perfect. So here's tearing. He was torn. Hence torn to pieces. The Roth repeated proper noun Joseph. All right, rereading the three verses 31 through 33. So they took Joseph's tunic, slaughtered a male goat from the mother, and dipped the tunic in the blood from the doe, nanny. Verse 32, and they sent the berry-colored tunic and had it brought to their father and said, we found this. Please examine it to see whether it is your son's tunic or not. Verse 33, then he examined it, Jacob did, and said, it is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. Now, says verses 31 through 33. One, the author here assumes his readers will recall Jacob's rejection of the interpretation of Joseph's dream back in verse 10 to siphon the spiritual lesson for the next sequence of events. You've got to maintain the context. You've got to recall certain events. You've got to fill in the blanks through this chapter, as we've all done. And remembering back what started all this, at least fueled the fire, was Joseph's two dreams that he related to his brothers and then to his brothers and fathers. And that is that they would be subservient to him, they would bow down to him. Jacob, in contrast to Joseph's brothers, did not reject the dream in its entirety. Joseph's brothers completely rejected it. They thought he was full of it. They became extremely antagonistic and hostile to him over it, and even became envious. And in the last dream, we made it clear that dream had all the attributes of doctrine attached to it through the astrological symbolism that is used in such a vein throughout the Bible, the sun, the moon, and the stars. Jacob did not completely dismiss the dream as anything other than probably doctrine. What he failed to do was to embrace and accept the clear interpretation of that dream. And that is that somehow the covenant heir of the Abrahamic covenant is going to be subservient to his young son and the family and brothers all together. His words were words of disbelief. This isn't right. He could not understand how this would work. He didn't understand what was going on. It's like people can see verses in the Bible. I mean, you can show them verses that say that homosexuality is an abomination before God. And part of the reason why judgment comes upon nations and people. And people can read it and say, yeah, it's in the Bible, but that's not what it means. See, they disregard the obvious interpretation. And that comes about through negative volition, or running one under one's SCA and failing to exercise faith in spite of it. The dreams in and of themselves are designed to ultimately provide them encouragement in a time of national need, when a great famine comes about later on in their history, and to continue to fill up a prophecy of Israel and its descendancy of becoming occupants of Egypt, the foreign country, in the process. So all this has doctrinal information, the dreams did, inserted in it, which at that point in time, obviously the clear interpretation or the full interpretation of what it means and being fulfilled, etc., is lost on all of them. Even Joseph didn't know what that was going to be, how it was all going to turn out. But the clear interpretation was they would be subservient. They would bow down to him. And that's what Israel rejects. So that's point two. That is Israel, a mature believer, failed to embrace the literal interpretation symbolically representing of himself and family bound down to Joseph. Three, and again, in case you're not getting it, in spite of the dream's obvious meaning, he refused to accept it. He refused to accept it. For the consequences of rejecting the doctrine translates into failure to address and pass the test now set before him in application. The failure to embrace that doctrine, this is doctrine that is pertinent in regards to the very application of the in regards to the very test that he is now facing, and will determine the type of response he will have in regards to passing that test or not. If you reject a doctrine and God brings about a circumstance situation that doctrine needs to be plugged in order to deal with that test, then obviously how you deal with that test is going to fall short in regards to glorifying God and having all the encouragement and comfort, etc., that is designed to be attached to doctrine otherwise in facing tests. Because he rejects the dream, as we'll see, he comes to false conclusions, and he has an emotional tailspin, an emotional meltdown. And he's a mature believer. He is Israel, the God-given name Israel. So again, point four, the consequences of rejecting the doctrine. Translation, to failure to address and pass the test now set before him in application. You never know when the situation may arise that doctrines that you thought, well, this really doesn't apply, will apply. You know, I've heard people in the past say, well, it's just prophecy. Well, it's a damn good thing we understand the prophecy, or we'd be just like the rest of the world out there spinning with their heads, going around their bodies under fear and everything else, reacting to all that's going on. See, in a negative way. We know what's going on. We know Satan's world. We know the platform and stage is being set for the Antichrist. That's a one world religious political government. You got to tear down the boundaries of nations in order to accomplish that feat. For those listening in TV land, you reject the prophecy, then the prophecy has no bearing. It has no weight to comfort you, to keep you stable emotionally and otherwise in regards to the test that it's designed to otherwise address. And of course, obviously, that's the big one that's in our picture today and in our minds. But it's applicable across the board. Across the board. That's why I've always said, if you don't understand the doctrine, fine. Sometimes it takes more information, etc. But don't reject it. Put it on the back burner and pray about it. Israel's problem was that he rejected the interpretation. He wrote it off. Whatever doctrinal impact it was, it doesn't really mean this. So five, Israel becomes an example of the repercussion or repercussions in the plural attached to the rejection of doctrine no matter one spiritual level. Just because you're in spiritual maturity does not make any of us immune into falling into this trap. Just because one reaches spiritual maturity doesn't make them automatically in like flint. We've got throughout the entirety of our life maintain the fidelity of our positive volition to continue to embrace the doctrine as we so assimilate it in regards to our lives. And at any given point in time, anyone at any spiritual level can blow off a doctrine or dismiss it as, well, that doesn't apply to me. That's not really what that means, even though I just read it to you. Even though, dear Father, you just interpreted it for me. Jacob interpreted the dream perfectly. So Israel here, with his colorful life that's been recorded for us. Obviously, we only have bits and pieces of Jacob's life. People will write him off as saying, he wasn't a very good believer or whatever. Now, they're idiots. He wasn't picked as a covenant heir because he was stupid spiritually. No, we all have our SCA problems. People that are intellectually honest will recognize it. Everybody has their own areas. See. And Israel is an example of the consequences. No matter what spiritual level for dismissing or rejecting doctrine in its obvious, clear, interpretative message. So 6, as will be obvious here in our verses, when confronted with the possibility of Joseph's death, he finds only emotionalism and a miscalculating response. Generally speaking, it is emotions that will jump in the way of your clear spiritual thinking that upends maintaining your faith in regards to doctrine. Emotions jump in. The doctrine goes against the grain of some human viewpoint, some sacred cow, whatever, one's SCA predilections. And emotions kick in. See? And you start letting your emotions rule rather than maintaining your intellectual honesty, staying in fellowship and keeping them at bay. Or it at bay, emotions. So again, as will be obvious, point 6, when confronted with the possibility of Joseph's death, he, Jacob, finds only emotionalism and a miscalculated response. 7, in other words, the vacuum created in his rejection of the doctrine left only his emotions and ill-conceived reasoning in handling the situation. If you do not embrace the doctrine, believe the doctrine, then you've got to fill in your thought with something else. Some alternative. And if it's not doctrinal, the only alternative in regards to what you can fill it in with is human viewpoint. That's sponsored by the sin nature. That's your two pools that you can draw from in regards to your thinking. Either the thinking of the world, sponsored by Satan, or the thinking of God, sponsored by God. All this is going to happen because he rejected one doctrine. He dismissed it. All right, point 8, the scene now picks up in verse 31, revealing the brothers' next step to cover up for selling Joseph into slavery that they came up with in verse 28. Nine, in spite of Reuben's dissenting remarks to his brothers earlier that we just dealt with, for implementing their plan without him, it becomes obvious that he has been updated as to Joseph's disposition. Commentators make mention that it doesn't say anything about Reuben. Well, Moses expects you to fill in the blanks, put some logic to the verses. Deductive reasoning. 10, now his knowledge of knowing what truly happened was imperative for all the brothers to be on the same page in agreement, building future inquiry as to Joseph's whereabouts. He didn't know, but obviously they fill him in after the fact. And they have to if they are going to pull this thing off as a group. They all have to be on the same page. You have one dissenter, one true dissenter, that can wreck it for everyone. No, Reuben, we didn't kill him. We sold him to slavery. Here's your 2 silver pieces. We included you in there. So 11, now it may be in part here, which I give mention to, that the brothers' actions were to help solve Reuben's expressed dilemma of having to face his father as a firstborn, primarily responsible for Joseph. That what they end up doing here, the scheme to ruin his coat with blood and send it to the father, was to help Reuben out. That's been suggested, which I give it mention. 12, however, was that their a primary motivating factor, and they had helped him out, was that his primary motivating factor by the brothers. That's the way I'm looking at it. 12, however, weighing the brothers' previous disregard of Reuben's tantrum, they ignored him. It's more probable that their actions are simply from the need to cover for themselves altogether. In other words, by all I'm seeing in these verses, the brothers don't appear that concerned towards Reuben's personal problems. So you got a problem with Dad. Well, yeah. That's what you get for sleeping with his wife. You know. Idiot. Thirteen, Reuben made no serious attempt to protect Joseph, so he has incriminated himself, forcing him to go along with the rest. What is that which cements his participation in agreement? Because he's not done anything really to help Joseph. He's still an accessory to after the fact, if you will, or to the fact. Therefore, he's in this just like the rest of them. So, that's how, in my mind, logically it would work out. It was all lip service. 14, now their strategy is simple enough. To appear ignorant of what happened to Joseph, apart from possible evidence of some harm. What's their defense? We don't know what happened. But we found this. Would you check it out? We think maybe it may be your kids. This is their defense. So 15, the first thing they did was, quote, they took Joseph's tunic and slaughtered a male goat and dipped the tunic in the blood. Lakoth. Kudnath Joseph wa Shekath Sair et wa Thava Kudnath Beth Hadam. 16, they slaughter a male goat and saturate Joseph's tunic in the blood. Seventeen, a forensic analysis of their actions here provides a clue that has bearing on Jacob's critique that will come about in verse 33. That is, their garment is still in one piece. They take the garment in its entirety. They dip it in the blood. They plunge it. So it's still in one piece. So that has bearing as we then investigate and look at Jacob's conclusion that he draws from what happened. 18, the brothers then show cowardice and have others do their dirty work. 19, they do not want to be put into the position of having to be immediately interrogated by their father. Quote, and they sent the very colored tunic and had it brought to their father. End quotes. As well, Shalak, Hakudneth, Hapaswabo El Alpha. You can see their thinking here, point 20. They keep their distance until they see how Jacob is going to react. First and foremost, we don't want to be immediately interrogated. Question 10 of them. You know, somebody could slip up pretty easily if somebody's really sharp and is suspicious. Second of all, we're not sure how he's going to react. He may blame us all. So 21, now Moses reemphasizes that the garment is still whole using the more complete descriptive phrase, "varicolored tunic," in quotes, as that which was sent. So he uses a full disclosure of the garment as varicolored or long-sleeved garment to maintain the implication that the garment is maintained as still one piece. In other words, it's not ripped to shreds and pieces are missing. So 22, the New American Standard Translation, quote, and brought it. That's at the New American Standard. They sent the varicolored tunic and brought it to their father. That's simply the English. So the New American Standard Translation, point 22, and brought it, in quotes, is misleading, implying the brothers possibly accompanied the garment. You could read that and say, well, the brothers were with the garment. They brought it to him personally. 23, the hifl form of the Hebrew bow, which is brought it, is literally, quote, caused it to go, end quote, indicating strict instruction to the carrier to ensure it went directly, quote, to their father, end quote. So they had someone bring it on their behalf, the courier or carrier of the garment. And the instruction is forceful. Make sure it gets to our dad. Who it is, one of their servants, whatever. Is not mentioned. Who takes it. 24. This along with the terse message, quote, we found this. Please examine it to see whether it is your son's tunic or not. End quote. Zoth masad nakar naaha kutneth ben he en lo. 25. Their message here insinuates that they stumbled across the garment and were otherwise ignorant of Joseph's whereabouts. 26, this to psychologically distance themselves in Jacob's mind. We have absolutely no idea what's going on here. The pleading ignorance. How many times have people done that to try to get out of problems? I don't know. Who broke the lamp? I don't know. I went around. Oh, something happened to the lamp, man. It's a dog. We don't have a dog. So they use the ploy to try to distance themselves in regards to the light. Twenty-seven. They even avoid using Joseph's name here in their calloused approach. See, arm's distance in regards to the whole situation. 28, their forensic request to Jacob insinuates that while it appeared possible in their eyes that it was Joseph's, they still need a confirmation. We think maybe it's his. 29, this again implies supposedly not knowing Joseph's physical condition otherwise. In other words, that is what they're trying to do here, is thwarting any suspicion of premeditated actions on their part. Remember, they got together, they banded together to deal with the situation to begin with. Now they're trying to wash out any thoughts of dirty laundry attached to them in that respect. So 30, they are playing the ignorance card as their major defense. So 31, the repercussion for disbelieving Joseph's dreams on Jacob's part is revealed then in the response in verse 33. And that's where we're going to go ahead and cut it off for today. Again, God's willing, the creek don't rise. I'll see you Tuesday. Father, again, thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us to these things in Jesus' name. Amen.